You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
And it's time for another Tim's Pick.
Almost a technical error there.
Yeah, I know. I got to refill the lighter. It doesn't want to light on the first strike. So what are we smoking today, Brad?
Today we are smoking the, La Flor Domenica, the NAS.
And that stands for nasty ass shit. And that's not an opinion of the cigar. That's what it literally stands for. This is like kind of a challenge cigar because it's from the people that recommended it to us was like, it will make you sick.
Yeah, I mean, this was one that was definitely recommended not to smoke on an empty stomach. And the premise behind that is this right now is only the true 100% Alhajero cigar. So
yeah, pretty much what that means is like some of your cigars that are a stronger strength have a couple Alhajero leaves in the mix. And this one's all of it. Filler, binder, wrapper, it's all Alhajero.
Yeah, and you know, I gotta say, just looking at the wrapper, I mean, appearance-wise, the thing looks ugly. I mean, yeah, you know, it's a cheroot, style cigar. So,
it's open on both ends. It's made without any kind of mold, so it's not really a symmetrical looking cigar. If you ever watch the old Clint Eastwood movies, you know, the stuff they always smoke in the Wild West movie, that's kind of what it looks like.
I'm definitely feeling like we need some nasty spurs and
yeah,
cowboy
I should be wearing a cowboy
and,
hat yeah. and twirling my six shooter to smoke this thing.
I guess we're gonna have to get some Garth Brooks or something to play in the background or
no country.
So I mean, overall, I mean, you know, we just lit up the cigar, so we're on the first third here, and this is probably the smallest cigar I've smoked, and not much bigger than, you know, probably a Swisher Sweet or something of that nature. I mean, you're looking at, you know, freaking
Swisher
5.5 by 42. I mean, I just had to throw it out there for reference.
If you're smoking Swisher Sweets, just turn this podcast off.
Or keep listening, and we'll introduce you to the finer indulgences in life. We don't want to lose any listeners, damn it, Joe.
Yeah, and we'll come back with an update at the end of the show and let you know if this thing made us sick or not. We'll have a little contest, see which one of us like passes out first from this yeah. thing.
Well, I don't know, man. I mean, you know, dynamite comes in small packages, so just starting off, I wasn't hit with the initial blast of, you know, pepper and spice that I was anticipating. So I'm hoping that, you know, once we get further down into second and then the final third of the cigar, you know, some of the strength and everything at that point really shines through.
I mean, so far this doesn't really taste as strong as some of the other LFD cigars like the DL700 or the Digger. But I don't know. We'll see how it holds up and whether or not we regret this decision. We'll be right back with our first annual, our biannual, because we may do it twice a year. Don't know. We haven't decided yet. Cigar Nerd of the Year. Be right back, folks.
Stay tuned.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul, you're on your own. The crow flies straight, a perfect line.
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. This episode, well, since, you know, Oscars just happened a couple days ago, we thought it would be cool to kind of give out our own award. And so we've kind of come up with Cigar Nerd Man of the Year. And you may ask, like, what qualifies someone to be the honor of Cigar Nerd Man of the Year? One thing I say, someone who always kind of exemplifies cigar culture, who, you know, really promotes, you know, cigar smoking as, you know, a cultural importance, stuff like that. What's some other things you think would include somebody in this honor?
I mean, you know, for me, it's somebody that personally enjoys and can appreciate a good cigar. Not only that, but, you know, is also able to offer advice and, you know, help to newcomers. You know, at some point, you know, whether it be a wedding or, you know, you're just celebrating with your buddies, somebody's going to hand you a cigar. And, you know, that can be a make or break for a lot of people, unfortunately, you know, not realizing the different types of tobaccos and fillers and construction, ring gauges, everything else that goes into, you know, being able to truly appreciate a cigar. I would say the other thing is, you know, somebody that has gone out like we have, you know, ultimately you've got multiple humidors sitting around and, you know, just a fan of the culture in general.
And it helps to be a badass and, you know, not just smoke a cigar because it's required of your character in a movie, but no, actually, you know, insist
indulge,
that
you,
you
know,
yes,
that
you are a cigar smoker. So our first annual inductee to Cigar Nerd Man of the Year is Ron Perlman.
Yep. You know, born April 13th, 1950, you know, American television, film, and voice actor. Best known for his roles in the Beauty and the Beast TV series.
I completely forgot about him playing Beast in that.
You know, in fact, I was almost half tempted to go and, you know, start watching some of that stuff just to...
I saw it when it was on, but I've not seen it in years. I remember it was him and what's-her-name from Terminator was playing Beauty. And I think she was like a detective or something. Like, if I remember correctly, she was like a cop or a detective or something. And Beast, you know, kind of helped her out along the way. But yeah, Ron Perlman... covered in hair as the Beast was.
Yeah, and I mean, he actually won a Golden Globe, you know, for that. So, you know, huge props there. A lot of folks are going to recognize him from the, you know, comic book character Hellboy, you know, both the first and the second one. And, you know, more recently as Clay Morrow in Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, I mean, he's always, I mean, he's a classically trained Shakespearean actor. He's been in, I mean, I was looking on IMDb, I think he's got like something like 200 credits. The dude has been in a lot of stuff.
I mean, he's done everything from, you know, TV to movies to games. In fact, I think it is either Amazon has an original series which he is starring in now. So that's something to check out. I haven't watched it yet, but, you know, he's been all over the spectrum. I mean, I've seen, you know... stuff where, you know, he narrates 1,000 Ways to Die back when that was on the Spike Channel.
Oh yeah, I love that show. I mean, his narration on that was hilarious. I mean, and the graphic nature of the deaths and stuff, and him just making little wisecracks about it was hilarious.
Absolutely. I mean, looking over, I mean, we're going to touch on basically Blade 2, Pacific Rim, get into
both. Yeah, he's definitely appeared in a lot of stuff that kind of falls into our nerdy category, like, you know, Hellboy, Blade, and even a lot of his voiceover work. I believe he's done some of the, like, DC superhero stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
he's did
DC stuff. He's did, you know, freaking, let's see, I think he's been... doing some Batman cameos stuff.
And one I almost forgot about was Alien Resurrection,
yeah,
I think.
Resurrection.
Yeah, that, you know, I actually liked his character in that movie, too. It was
yeah,
it
I mean, he
sweet.
Did, you know, Mortal Kombat, The Defenders of the Realm, let's see here, Deathstroke and The Terminator, Teen Titans.
That's it, Deathstroke. Yeah, he's voiced Deathstroke in a bunch of stuff in the original, whatever, Justice League, I think it was, or I may be mistaken, but I know he's done that voice in the Teen Titans current series as well.
Yeah, Clayface in Batman the Animated Series, Superman,
Yeah, Clayface, that was one that I didn't realize that he had done until we started going.
I mean,
back
that's
and
the thing. Like, I'm
stuff.
Going back, you know, finding. I mean, that's just like we were sitting around watching Blade 2 today, and you know, both Rachel and I were like, "Holy shit, is that, you know, kind of a, you know, douchier version of Norman Reedus in this film?" Like,
All right, well then, since you've brought it up, let's start with Blade 2. I think Blade 2 of the trilogy is probably my favorite one. I mean, I liked it even better than I did the original version. It was kind of cool seeing the if you don't recall, you know, Blade, Vampire Hunter, Daywalker, played by Wesley Snipes, with his war on the vampires based on an old Marvel comic book too. So yeah, he's technically in the MCU now. But yeah,
it's funny how we keep coming back to the MCU. We cannot escape it, man.
We're nerds, everywhere. Man. That's a big thing right now. But yeah, he in Blade 2, Blade, there's a worse thing out than vampires. It's the what's the name of the ultra vampires in Blade 2?
Well, he's the leader of the Blood.
No, I'm talking about the bad guys that they're after the.
Their name has slipped my mind.
Quick to the Googles, find that out. But anyway, there's these vampires that are like a mutated version of a vampire, where they pretty much can, even if they're dead, they still come back to life, and they have these like nasty sucker faces things that will,
they look alien.
Yeah, like they say, they turn in other vampires into whatever these monsters are, and it's to the point where the vampires themselves actually ask Blade for help, because these things are killing off all the vampires, and they're like, as soon as they finish with us, they're going to start, feeding on your humans. And then their hearts are kind of armor plated, so they're almost impossible to kill. And Blade has to team up with this kind of like the A-team, like SWAT team of vampires that the, Vampire Council has been training to actually hunt Blade. And the leader of the group is Ron Perlman, and the group's called the Blood Pack, and his character is called Reinhardt.
Yeah, and basically, it's kind of crazy that, I was reading some of the commentary and stuff like that where, they're talking about his character actually being, semi-racist and cracking jokes about Blade's skin color and,
he's like,
in fact,
blush. It's like one of the first things he says to Blade.
Del Toro actually referred to this character as a, Nazi in the, director's edition in the commentary section. And
it's the Reaper virus is what they call the mutated vampires.
Yeah, it's nasty stuff. The final, fight scene between, freaking Blade and Reinhardt is just absolutely ridiculous, too.
Yeah. I like when they kind of first meet up, Blade end up sticks a bomb on his head that's stuck in his head through the whole movie. And so anytime he starts giving Blade shit, he just kind of like hits a button on his remote to remind him that, like, you mess with me, I'm gonna blow your head off.
Yeah, which is crazy too, because Scott, he's the character played by Norman Reedus, there toward the latter part of the movie, basically says, oh yeah, I'm an insider actually working for Blood Pack and everything, trying to help those guys. So that's a dud.
I could completely forgot that was Norman Reedus until you mentioned it. It's been so long since I've seen that movie. But yeah, I like the character of Scud. I mean, I liked the fact that Whistler was back in it. And yeah, I always like Chris Christopherson's character. I mean, he's always like kind of like a badass redneck.
Absolutely. But yeah, I mean, it's just crazy, the manipulation and everything else there. And come to find out, what Scud thought was a dud, Blade was one step ahead of him. And, just freaking, you just see,
I love his speech because, Scud is like giving him shit. He's like, I played you on all this. And he's like, first off, I knew you were a bitch since you joined us. And two, that's not a dud. And like just blows it and just freaking liquefies him.
You know, if that happened in The Walking Dead or something, people would riot.
Yeah. Oh,
so yeah. Let's hope we don't see walkers with freaking, nitrogen, bombs embedded in their skin or something.
Yeah, freaking Scud shows up in The Walking Dead.
I mean, it's just crazy to see the dynamic, I mean, I'm not trying to take away from Perlman here by any, stretch of the imagination, but, to see, Norman and Boondock Saints and those types of movies, and then to see him in Blade 2, you're just like,
he's
kind of
like
a young, sketch character,
Young, douchebag guy. It's kind of funny now that everybody's, you know, that character Daryl Dixon
on the bandwagon,
is how they identify him now. I'd like to see him, Ron Perlman, show up on Walking Dead. I think he'd be him and Rick get into it or something.
Dude, that would be either a very devastating duo or it's going to be a badass, you know, partnership. But
I'm sure there's celebrities in that world. They need to have him show up as himself. Like he's not a character. It's like Ron Perlman has survived the apocalypse and now he's like, you know, walking around smoking a cigar, like being a badass and killing zombies.
I mean, it would be very fitting. I mean,
punching zombies in the face with his Hellboy hand.
Hell, it wouldn't be, you know, his first dealing with the you know, apocalyptic world anyway, which we saw that in Pacific Rim. So
yeah, and like I said, that fight scene with him and Wesley Snipes in Blade 2 is just awesome. I mean, he like, you know, freaking cuts him in half, if I remember correctly. He's can you blush? And like freaking just fucks him up.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, man. It's inspired me to go back and watch the Blade trilogy all over again.
Yeah, because I mean, that whole series is, I loved it. Yeah, the first one was good. I always liked, you know, he had, Blade's such a badass. I mean, he had like a badass car and that, you know, that sword. I don't know how many of those like cheap knockoff versions of that sword has been sold because of those movies. I mean, I know I wanted to buy one. I never did, but it's probably the reason I went back to wearing trench coats was...
Dude, it's almost like if you could envision Batman, you know, fighting vampires or something with all the gadgets and gizmos and everything else there. I mean, I would just say, actually almost a cross between, you know, freaking Tony Stark and Batman in a way, just because...
It's kind of off topic, but did you ever see the Blade animated series?
I've seen bits and pieces, but I've not seen.
I sat down and watched all of the Marvel anime. They did like four different storylines with a kind of an anime art style to it. But one of them was Blade, and it was damn good. And like all four series kind of like intertwines occasionally. So Wolverine shows up, I think, at some point. Him and Blade kind of hang out for a bit. Speaking of like, you know, cigar nerds, you know, Wolverine would definitely qualify as a cigar smoking character.
You just don't want to piss the guy off.
No, I mean, and that's something they brought into.
He's also a great guy to have around too if you happen to forget your cutter or not having access to a cutter. I mean, you know,
and he's Canadian. And that's one thing, you know, they brought into the X-Men movies is he still, you know, smokes a bunch of cigars and stuff in that movie. So we may have to talk about. Wolverine is the may have to do an episode on Wolverine and talk about his love of cigars.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, you know, anybody that you're more than welcome to, you know, comment with your feedback, you know, tweet us or, you know, comment on our Facebook or just send us an email in general and, you know, let us know your picks as well as,
yeah,
to,
this
you know,
is something
you
we're
going to
start doing
or...
yearly, maybe, you know, a couple times, quarterly or something like that. So if you have any other nominations for Cigar Nerd Man of the Year, yeah, send them to us. Let us hear what you who you think we should include. Speaking of, back to Ron Perlman, another kind of nerdy comic booky character. Let's talk about Hellboy for a minute.
Yeah, Hellboy. I mean, I think we could spend quite a few more than just a minute. You know, there was some.
I hope so. We have an hour to fill. So.
There was definitely some, you know, awesome facts. You know, at 58, when Hellboy, the Golden Army, was released, you know, 58? Ron Perlman, Ron Perlman was 58 when he was, you know,
like,
cast,
that was 2008.
you know, for the character, which the movie came out in 2008, but it made him the oldest, you know, person to play a main superhero. So,
yeah, I mean, Ron Perlman's, like, his age doesn't matter. That dude is, like, always been a badass and still continues to be a badass. Let's talk about the first one first. 2004's Hellboy.
Well, you know, it's really awesome. When I went back, I watched the movies back to back, and you know, the scene in the first movie where the guy walks up, I can't remember what his name is, kind of the, you know, hard ass, I want to play by the book.
That would be Agent Manning, played by Jeffrey Tambor.
Yeah, so Agent Manning, you know, basically walks up. I mean, he'd been given Hellboy shit for being in the limelight and everything else all through this. Well, you know, Hellboy's father eventually gets killed, and, you know, they are, you know, standing in a room by themselves, and he's basically, you know, Hellboy's over there with his freaking Zippo trying to light the cigar with no fluid.
Yeah, those two dudes have not liked each other through the whole movie, and in that scene, they just kind of, like, fought a monster together, and Hellboy, like, you know, saves his ass, and they kind of become friends, and kind of like a father figure.
There's like a mutual respect at that
point. He teaches
them
the proper way to light a cigar, because the whole movie, Hellboy's been lighting a cigar with this, like, you know, cool old Zippo. And anyone who smokes cigar knows you don't use a Zippo to light cigars because the fuel will taint the flavor of the cigar. You want to either use butane, which is a clean fuel, or a wood match, as he suggests.
That way it enhances, and you just see Hellboy, you know, strike the wood match, and he's like, damn. He's like, you're onto something here. So, you know, at that point, I would almost say that, you know, Agent Manning at that point could almost qualify as, you know, the connoisseur aspect of things.
Yeah, he finally kind of taught him a lesson. And, you know, after he, you tell he's like, it does taste better. Yeah, and he's like, you know, thanks. And he's like, thank you.
But, yeah, I mean, just to kind of speak to the badassdom of, you know, freaking Neil Perlman or Ron Perlman. Perlman, shit, the beer's already getting to me on an empty stomach.
You should have went and eaten.
So the subway scene, you know, where you see him jump onto the oncoming train. Well, apparently that train is moving at 45 mile per hour on the set. In fact, he ended up breaking his rib, you know, trying to do that stunt. And
I've broken a couple ribs fighting before, and it's not fun. but yeah, let's just kind of go back to the beginning here for a minute. Yeah. Hellboy was directed by Guillermo del Toro, which, dude, is
you
like...
You see del Toro and, you know, freaking...
Pan's Labyrinth,
Roman, yeah.
Pacific Rim. I mean, the dude makes some badass movies. Ron Perlman plays Hellboy, which, if you're not familiar with the comic, is a demon that was brought into the world from a... Well, back in the 1944, I think it is.
Yeah,
the,
World War II era.
The Nazis
are experimenting with black magic.
Yeah, and they try to open a portal to release these, like, elder gods, kind of like Cthulhu, but they don't call him Cthulhu in the movie.
And, but there is definitely some Lovecraftian references.
Which I kind of like that storyline, too, because that's something that actually, you know, really occurred. Hitler was obsessed with the occult, and that whole story of him trying to acquire the Spear of Destiny, that's something that, you know, legitimately occurred, or that he was kind of obsessed with all that shit. Well, you know, they try to open this portal, and the, you know, allies stop them, but, you know, something gets through, and it's this child that's, you know, kind of like a little demon devil-looking thing with a big... stone fist, and he ends up getting raised by this professor, I think they call him Professor Broom, and becomes part of the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense. And as they say, you know, it's things go bump in the night and we bump back, and he's basically him and his sidekick Abe Sapien, which is like a psychic or telekinetic fish guy, played by Doug Jones, which is, you know, a famous monster actor himself who's played... all kind. You rarely see the guy out of makeup. He's always playing some kind of weird alien monster, whatever.
Yeah, speaking of makeup,
they fight the weird, you know, monsters and stuff. That
I didn't realize this, but it took over 4 hours for you know, the makeup crew and everything to you know, transform Perlman into, you know, full on Hellboy. So I mean,
yeah,
dude,
that was a
to sit there, you know, for
outfit.
Half a day, you know, just with
every day too. I mean, it's like. It's not like you do it once and you're in it. No, that's something you got to do every day when you come to set. So, yeah.
I think I would just have to sleep
impressive.
In, you know, what makeup, and hopefully we could do a touch-up the next day.
Yeah, Perlman was jacked in that movie, too, man. He was, I mean, he was in shape then. I mean, he was a badass. But, yeah, I love that movie. And speaking to the, you know, cigar nerd aspect of it, he smoked, like, every scene. I mean, even when he's fighting, he's got a cigar in his mouth, and...
Well, I mean, that was the start to most of the fights, is, you know, he's like, oh, shit's about to pop off, so let me just go ahead and,
yeah, I mean, like,
you
anybody
know, get
knows.
Some nicotine in my system and everything else,
you gotta break out a stogie before you fight evil. And he smoked Hoyo de Nicaragua, was the cigar brand of Hellboy. So, I mean, it's legit. And I read a couple years ago, I think now, Cigar Aficionado interview with Perlman. And I think if it's not in that article, it's another article. Someone asked, like, how do you how did you do it in Hellboy smoking so many cigars take after take? And he was like, dude, I smoke this many cigars on like a regular basis, so it's not much different than my real life.
I was just doing what comes naturally. And I think that's another thing that we need to, you know, throw out there as a requirement for, you know, our, you know, cigar aficionado. I'm going to butcher that word all throughout the podcast. So just get used to it.
That's another rule for the dream game. Anytime Brad mispronounces something, take a drink.
Yeah. In fact, Brad's probably going to stop taking drinks at this point because we got to continue on with the
segment. I'm going to write all these rules down at some point and like post them on the website.
We'll have an outline.
The cigar nerd drinking game.
But
you were saying.
I don't even know. I lost
it. You said something about cigar aficionado.
Yeah, so, you know, that's another requirement is, you know, being on that level. So not, you know, like we touched on, not just doing it as a prop or truly enjoying what you're doing.
Yeah, that article, too, where Perlman did the interview, he had a great quote. Let me see if I can find it.
Yeah, in fact, I've actually printed off the interview. So if we don't find it right now, I mean, we can definitely touch on the interview, you know, coming up, here in just a bit.
Talk about some more Hellboy while I find this.
So, I mean, basically, you see, you know, the large-skinned, you know, man with the tail, the horns. I thought it was ironic that the way they make peace with, you know, the young version of Hellboy is by offering him, what was it, a Baby Ruth candy bar?
Something like that, yeah. They lure him in with some candy, and then after that, it's like, you know, it's always food with him. There's I think, like, when you see him, it's like, you know, like a pile of bacon and chili and everything else and cigars and cheap Mexican beer. I mean, the dude has an appetite.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing I liked about the character, too, was the sense of humor that he brought back. I mean, you know, there were some serious times, but then there were, you know, some awesome, you know, quotes and everything else. And, you know, basically he goes on to help the agency fight against the dark forces, which is kind of ironic considering that the prophecy actually says that Hellboy would be the one to destroy the world. Which I think we find that out in the second movie.
And then his character, or the bad guy in that movie too, is Rasputin, which Rasputin has always kind of been a badass historical figure. I mean, that dude was legit scary.
Speaking of Rasputin, that's probably a beer we need to get our hands on and do a beer 30 segment on.
All right. I found his quote. He talks about smoking cigars, and he says, smoking a cigar, you have to take your act down a notch. It's such a stoic thing. It demands that you give it your attention. Some people meditate. I smoke cigars.
I like it. So eventually we're going to come up with some beer quotes, some cigar quotes, and we're going to have, you know, a collection. And we'll actually have some ways to end, you know, our Tim Pick segment and everything with some legit cigar stuff. But yeah, another thing, kind of going back to, you know, our previous steampunk episode, there were a lot of, you know, steampunk elements in not only the first film, but definitely the second film.
Yeah, it's kind of listed there, some of the, like, top, if not steampunk, diesel punk movies. Specifically talking about the first one, the bad guy in that, he's like a clockwork, you know, Nazi assassin that who's been around, so he just kind of like winds up his chest and goes to kicking ass.
That guy versus Blade, or we were talking about the Walking Dead earlier, Michonne. You're talking about some epic sword fights, like
steampunk Nazi versus Michonne.
Like, dude, I think we need to do a fan film mashup and just see, you know, what the outcome of those fights would be.
Kind of like that old show, whatever, Deadliest Warrior, where they
exactly
pick warriors and put them together. And then even more steampunk is 2008's. And also the first Hellboy, John Hurt, who recently played the War Doctor on Doctor Who. Played Dr. Broom, and I liked that character in the first movie. He was cool, kind of as his you know adopted father, and I thought he was kind of a badass character. He had some great, you know, quotes in the movie.
Absolutely, and the soundtrack to the movie as well was freaking awesome. I mean, I was listening to you know, some of the songs and scenes were flashing back in my head and everything else. It just jives so well and everything. But yeah, I think I'm ready to move on to the Golden Army.
That's even more, I would say, steampunk.
Yes. I mean, you're seeing, I don't know, you know, I kind of had a feeling of, you know, some of the Ents and, you know, Lord of the Rings and stuff like that, because you saw a lot of paganism, you know.
Yeah, there's like a whole
one with nature and the trolls and...
Yeah, there's like a whole, like, secret underground society of these mystical creatures, trolls. I mean, I think one of the early scenes in the movie, the main bad guy, who I don't have his name in front of me, he's looking for this crown of the... was it the Elf King or something
like
that?
It's like the bad guy's name is, I think it's Prince Nuada, I believe is how it's pronounced. Nuada.
His father, the king, made this mechanical army that would destroy the humans, but he decided not to use it and broke the crown into three pieces. So this guy's trying to acquire all the pieces of the crown.
Yeah, basically, you know, there was a truce between.
Resurrect
the
army and destroy the monster.
You know, between the elven, I guess there would be more elven, you know, clerics and the human race, you know, and the king had already come to realize that humans are just going to do what humans do naturally. They're going to try to progress and evolve, and unfortunately they're not as in tuned in nature and everything, but the king was willing to say that, hey, we can agree to disagree, let's call a truce.
Y'all stay in your cities, we'll stay in our forest, and let's just have peace. Yeah, one of the early scenes, he goes to get a part of that crown at some kind of auction and kills everybody in the auction with these tooth fairies that are
dude, those things are creepy as hell.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, because they go after anything calcium first, I believe is how it was described in the films.
Yeah, those things are nasty. But yeah, and speaking back to the cigar elements of it, because, you know, there's always got to be some kind of cigar thing in it.
The one quote that really stood out in my mind, and I think you were probably going to try to steal it from me.
Go ahead.
But, you know, where he's getting ready to fight, you know.
But before that, Agent Manning is trying to, like, bribe Hellboy not to reveal himself to the general public, because they're like, you know, keep trying to make him a secret, and he bribes him with, like, good Cuban cigars. He's like, you know, he's like, going out in public would be bad, but these are good. If, you know, if you stay good, I'll give you, like, a box of Cubans.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm like a shadow in the night. And he takes a couple Cubans from him.
Just knowing that it's not in Hellboy's nature to do anything low-key. But, you know, there's one scene where he gets in a fight and, you know, basically ends up dropping his cigar in a puddle of water. And he's like...
Well, dude punches him in the face while he's smoking his cigar and just shreds his cigar.
So the cigar ends up in the water and, you know, Hellboy just comes out and said, you know, the cigar, it was Cuban. Now I'm pissed off. Like,
yeah.
You know, that was the breaking point.
Yeah, if something's going to get you shot, you know, messing up my Cuban is probably one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, the freaking tooth fairies, the...
And we also see the agent, what is it, the angel of death or something. Or, you know, they actually have to go see death because Hellboy gets injured and death is the only one that can heal him. And death is also played by Doug Jones. He has, like, I think three different roles in this movie. But, and this is also in the first movie, it was, Doug Jones' character, Abe, was voiced by, Neil Hyde Pierce I'm blanking now.
Yeah, the beer's getting to you now, too, I see.
No, it's just I'm old and I've not had a chance to do the research. Anyway, in the first movie, he was voiced by somebody else, but in this one, he actually did the voice himself, so you actually get to hear Doug talk in this one. But yeah, he, like I said, they go to the Angel of Death, and Death, like, warns him, like, you know, Hellboy will eventually destroy the Earth, you know, so you have to choose whether or not he comes back.
Yeah, and, you know, basically, Hellboy's, you know, girlfriend Liz, you know, has to make a decision, you know, right then and there. Does she let him die, or... You know, I think the part of the truce is what's the one thing you can tell him that's going to give him a reason to wake up? And, you know, I think it's revealed at that point that she's pregnant with twins and everything. So you see Hellboy come to, and Liz's character is freaking
Selma
awesome.
Selma Blair, she's so hot. Literally in this movie, because she's just a pyrokinetic and makes stuff.
One chick
on
you
fire.
Don't want to piss off. Like, I mean, you know, you just see her erupt into flames, and you know, she's just looking around saying, all right, all of you guys, you probably want to run. This isn't going to end well.
But she could also light your cigar without a lighter. And that's kind of hot.
So, I mean, you know, once again, so what are we saying? Do we need Wolverine and Liz as like a team that no matter what happens in the world, you got somebody to cut and light your cigar?
Exactly.
Like...
that's my team there. And there was also a new character in this movie, too, that like he was, I mean, the guy was made out of gas and had this like mechanical suit. So he was, you know, I mean, he was pretty steampunk himself, and that was voiced by Seth MacFarlane.
Yep, and, you know, basically, yeah, he's described as an ectoplasmic medium. And, dude, the guy is a badass. I mean, you just see him, you know, basically, I mean, he'll just open up a valve and, you know, be able to either, you know, serve as like a necromancer and... resurrect the living. Like, I think they, you know, managed to resurrect one of the tooth fairies or something like that. And, you know, that tooth fairy is just giving Hellboy all kinds of shit for, you know, just, you know, killing him and everything. And the guy's like, all right, well, I understand this guy's an asshole, but, you know.
Yeah, that's some of the funniest parts of Hellboy, too. When in the first one, too, when he's looking for a guide to show him how to get to Rasputin's grave, he resurrects some, like, hanged dude. And the guy's just calling him, like, a dumb red monkey. And,
yeah.
He's and like, just, he's like, if
I
still I had legs.
You all.
If I still had legs, I would kick your ass.
So, yeah, I mean, that's just crazy to see a guy walking around with just a torso and a head strapped to his back.
I mean, that part cracked me up so bad.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, later on, basically, you're... they go to the army's location, you know, Gates of the Causeway, and, you know, they encounter the, you know, the head goblin who, you know, basically brings them before the Angel of Death. They resurrect Hellboy, and then, you know, basically they ended up being led to the resting place of the Golden Army where the prince is awaiting. And that is a fucking epic battle in itself.
Yeah, that fight scene is badass. You know, he has like a new gun that's like, huge, the big baby, as he calls it.
Yes.
Blasting these clockwork soldiers right and left.
I mean, I just, what would you compare that to as a real gun? Like,
that would be the BFG from Doom. I mean, pretty much.
BFG 9000.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, dude, both of the Hellboy movies and everything, just absolutely phenomenal. And it was crazy, too, because I remember watching Hellboy the first time thinking that I really wasn't going to get into it, and I ended up falling in love with the movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those... it made money, but it didn't really get a whole lot of... I think, like, Hellboy 2 was number one in the box office when it was released until Dark Knight came out. I think was like the next thing that kind of knocked it off the list.
That was, you know, in some of my research I was actually reading, and, you know, Perlman had actually come out and said that, you know, he's wishing they will do a third Hellboy. So,
yeah, I mean, and
that may be something. And
to speak of the man himself doing good things, he, you know, he's recently actually put back on the Hellboy suit for a, like, Make-A-Wish event, and actually went and met with a kid that had leukemia as Hellboy. And I mean, to go through, like, you know, 5 hours of makeup and stuff to make, you know, like, some kid's day, that's, like I said, I got mad respect for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you see him, you know, basically, you know, this kid just reached out saying that, you know, he loved the character and everything else, and, you know, Perlman was more than, you know, ecstatic to be able to do this, you know, as, you know, the kid's, you know, actual wish, and, you know, went on to, you know, Facebook page and everything else. And I mean, I got mad respect for anybody that's willing to, you know, go through that for a good cause.
Yeah, I would love to see like a third Hellboy movie if he chose to do it. I mean, Del Toro is like, you know, he's making big movies now. So, I mean, he could, if he wanted to do it, he could easily get it made.
Yeah, so, you know, and one thing I didn't know is the kid's name is Zachary, and basically, you know, the kid later on got to become a, you know, what's described as a pint-sized Hellboy himself. So, you know, you can find, you know, quite a few of the pictures and photos and everything else posted on Facebook, so...
And Hellboy's gun, the Samaritan, too, is like I've seen a few renditions of that at Dragon Con, and it's I want one.
Yes, dude, that would be I would love to see, you know, Dragon Con, some of the badass Hellboy costumes and everything out there.
I don't remember it's been a while since I don't know if I've seen a full Hellboy. I think I have, but yeah, that's a complicated costume to do.
Absolutely. You know, one of the lesser-known films that I went back and watched was Kid Cannabis that came out in 2014. And it's basically based on a true story of, you know, these people from, you know, basically a teenager that drops out of high school, becomes decides that, you know what, we're close to the Canadian border, so we're going to start running marijuana and everything. So he gets together a crew, and Perlman actually is... one of the guys, Barry Lerner, who's an Israeli-American businessman, who ends up, you know, basically funding, you know, the drug operation and everything. But what I thought was going to be a cheesy stoner comedy was, in fact, a, you know, very down-to-earth, you know, movie. You see the kid, you know, he, you know, basically gets... multi-millionaire and ends up buying his mom, you know, a brand new house and everything else. And, you know, the entire time, all he's focused on is not necessarily his personal gain, but, you know, helping his group of friends, helping out his mom and everything. And, you know, you do see some of the drama and stuff that unfolds when they get into, you know, some fights with some of the other, you know, drug runners and stuff like that. But it's a movie that I would encourage folks to go out and, you know, check. Like I said, it's not a stoner comedy at all. It's got some lighthearted moments, but at the same time, yeah, you know,
I've not seen that one. I'll check that out.
You know, and I think that one was on Netflix that I watched. So
I'm going to check that out. I know one of my friends when we were doing this said we need to check out Frankie Go Boom because Ron Perlman plays a transvestite in the movie.
Oh, shit.
So I've not had a chance to check that out yet, but that... Ron Perlman in a dress has just got to be weird. It's a big dude to be wearing a dress.
Well, that's the thing, man, is, you know, some of the movies that I've seen him in, I mean, he just looks like a, you know, freaking monster of a dude. And then, you know, in Pacific Rim, I didn't really see, he looked like he was toned down as far as the character was. He wasn't near as, you know, beefy and everything as I remembered him being in Sons of Anarchy or...
Hannibal Chow, who was like an underground... kind of like black market dealer in parts of Kaijin. And yeah, he had some style in that movie. I dig the character. He wasn't in it a whole bunch, but yeah, he was pretty badass.
It was too, because, you know, and
sweet boots. And
you know, even Perlman comes out and, you know, says that, you know, he thought the character should be cast with a different ethnicity, you know, just because of the part of town and everything else that, you know, they showed him in, you know, but it was really awesome to see him, you know, come together as that character and, you know, maintain that badassdom.
Yeah. When he like tries to like, you know, stab monster with his, with his knife.
Yes.
And then like the like freaking monster, I think like swallows him at some point, but he cuts his way out at like the end. Like, yeah, you know, nobody kills freaking Ron Perlman.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy. You know, I mean, you got these kaijus that, you know, I mean, there's different categories of them, but you know, they're basically, you know, harvesting all the organs and everything else to sell in the black market. And
which, I mean, you kind of see that in like whatever Chinese medicine anyway, that you know, they treat all kind of injuries and whatnot with different parts of like, you know, animals, like, you know, deer antler and whatnot. So I could totally see somebody, you know, starting a black market dealing in leftover parts from these monsters.
Yeah, and, you know, Pacific Rim was actually, you know, the fifth film that Perlman was, you know...
Also a Guillermo del Toro film.
So, you know, I don't know, man. The del Toro and Perlman combination, I mean, it just jibes and it works so well.
Yeah, I mean, he tries to put him, even if it's a cameo in, like, all his movies. In Pacific Rim, I love that movie. Because, I mean, I've always been a fan of the Godzilla monster movies, and that one was so... I mean, these giant robots fighting these monsters, and it looked realistic. I mean, it looked like there was a big ass robot fight, especially that fight scene they get like in where they're fighting the monster in like downtown Tokyo, and he's like using a giant ship as a sword nearly. And
yes,
I was like, oh, that was just so freaking epic.
Yeah, you know, Chow, you know, it goes on to explain that basically took, you know, got his name from his favorite historical figure and second favorite, Saskatchewan restaurant in Brooklyn. So, I mean,
Hannibal Chow is a badass name.
Yeah, well, I mean, you see, you know, these freaking larger-than-life characters, and I guess that's one thing that Perlman really brings to the table is, you know, you get somebody that just seems so much larger than life, and he just puts it in retrospect, that you're just like, you know what, he plays it down to a T, and, you know, regardless of what he's doing, I mean, he is a very convincing actor, and yeah, no matter what role he's playing in.
His smaller roles, I mean, he just brings, like, a weight to the character that you don't see from a lot of actors. He's got a recognizable voice. I mean, his voice work, too, is just amazing. Some of the voice work stuff that he's done. I know you did some research on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he actually did, going back a little bit old school, the, Voice of Slade in the 2008 Turok game. He does freaking provided narration for the introduction to UFC on Fox 13. I mean... You know, basically, let's see here. Fleet Admiral Lord Terrence Hood, who commands Earth Space Defenses against the Covenant in the games Halo 2 and Halo 3.
Oh, I forgot about that.
You know, freaking, let's see here. It looks like Batman and Justice League Heroes. Known for the Fallout games, for narrating the introductory movie in the series, including uttering the famous phrase, war never changes. A game that I thought was fun that received a lot of press for the game Gun, where he was Mayor Hoodoo.
I don't think I've played Gun, but... Yeah.
Dude... As much of a gun guru as I know you are, you have to play that game. That game is, I mean, and you'll even see it on like Game Informer and stuff like that. It is gun porn, is what it is.
Sweet.
I mean,
I'm gonna check that one out.
So I mean, just all over the freaking spectrum.
Yeah, I didn't realize he was the voice of Clayface in the original Batman animated series, which is one of my like absolute favorite incarnations of Batman. Yeah, I mean the dude has a voice for voiceover. I mean, it's always just, you know, like impressive to hear him.
Yeah, we're gonna need to see if we can get him to voice one of our intros or something. I mean, it would just it's such a dynamic.
Man, I tweeted him and told him that he was Cigar Nerd Man of the Year, so maybe he'll get back to us.
I guess we're gonna have to steal from Tabletop and get a freaking trophy or something that we can send to him. Be like, hey, we can send you this, but you're gonna have to give it back because we can't afford to let you keep it.
We'll send him a cigar. Yeah.
Can we do that? Is that a real thing?
Oh no, we'll find his address. We'll mail him one. Maybe we can get him on the podcast, bribe him with some cigars. Yeah. To move on to something, another badass cigar smoker he's played, Clay Morrow in Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, dude, I was, you know, and in fact, Perlman actually comes out in some of the commentary and interviews that I read that, you know, he was really disappointed in the, you know, the ending, you know, to Clay's story, you know, basically, you know, I mean, I think in most of his roles, you know, he really looks for people to appreciate his role. And, you know, he went from, you know, Clay being... pretty decent guy until you really learned, you know, true history of his character. But, you know, he said he was a little bit disappointed in the direction and actually having to, you know, basically became a hated character.
Yeah, I mean, because the first couple seasons, you know, you kind of know he's the bad guy because it's, I mean, the whole thing is kind of based on Hamlet, which anybody who knows anything about, you know, Shakespearean stuff, you know, Hamlet finds out that the king, his stepfather, had killed his father and married his mother, and yada yada. So this is kind of like a modern telling of Hamlet, which I'm kind of I'm a kind of a fan of like modern retellings of Shakespearean stuff, like the Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio. I kind of like these modern, even the modern like versions of Sherlock and stuff. I kind of like these you know, modern interpretations.
I mean, it's an interesting twist.
Yeah, Shakespeare on motorcycles. I thought that was a kind of a cool thing. But yeah, I mean, his character definitely goes through a change. I mean, there's you kind of think he's a bad guy, but he's still likable in like the first couple seasons, and then he just goes like full on gangster evil by the end of it. I mean, when he kills Piney, that's when you're like, oh yeah, this guy has to die. I mean, there's no coming back from that. I mean, you kill Piney, you're going down.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you saw that progression with so many of the characters and everything like that. That I mean, I. You know, it was crazy. I was reading, you know, some of the stuff that he was talking about actually not liking motorcycles just for the sheer fact that, you know, one, he was uncomfortable being on something so small with so much power that he had never really ridden motorcycles or anything up until, you know, Sons of Anarchy. But, you know, one of the things that I remember him saying was, you know, basically he preferred his Mercedes because he could text, he could drive, he was out of the elements, and he could smoke a cigar.
Yeah, that's the only thing. I mean, pretty much every episode, at least once, he smoked a cigar. I mean, it was, and he wouldn't always send him. I mean, he had some Cohibas, some Camachos. I mean, cigars were featured pretty heavily. Him and Bobby both were like big cigar smokers in that series.
I mean, which, you know, it really goes hand. I mean, you know, the cigar shop that we hang out in. Yeah, I mean, there is a you know, very lucrative group that comes in. I mean, you know, you get some of the hardcore bikers, you get, you know,
I mean, Tim has
military personnel.
Clay bobblehead up on the wall.
Yeah, he's actually got one of Jack's, which I have not seen anywhere.
Yeah, I think I saw that at Barnes & Noble. Yeah, he has the Jack's and the Clay hanging on the wall in there, so there's mad respect for for Clay and his cigar smoking. And, I mean, and it's always... I've heard that show kind of described as a show for cigar smokers, because usually when they're smoking a cigar, you see the label and everything. You know exactly what they're smoking in the shows. I mean, it's featured pretty.
I mean,
and it even inspired its own cigar.
You actually had the opportunity to you know, smoke one of the Sons of Anarchy cigars. Tell us a little bit about that one.
I mean, it was good. I bought it pretty much because of the label, because the label is the Sons of Anarchy Reaper logo. And, like, the band is like a tire track going around it.
Oh, that's
but,
really
I mean,
awesome.
It was a badass cigar. And I think they're coming out with another version pretty soon called, it says Sam Crow on the label. And they're calling it their Clubhouse Edition. But yeah, it's Black Crown Cigars makes it. And it's a damn good smoke. I may have to order a box of those.
Absolutely. Yeah, go ahead and jump on that bandwagon while we can before, you know, the government tries to shaft us or something. We're going to have to end up, you know, cigar running at some point, I see, in our lifetimes.
I'm going to go outlaw.
You'll get you another bike. I'll get me a bike. And
instead of running guns and drugs, we'll be running cigars. We need to get us some, like, leather jackets with the Cigar Nerd logo on the back. Yeah.
Dude, I've been trying to tell you, man, we got to get patches. And we got to figure out, though, how do you become a patch member of the Cigar Nerds?
You know, first you have to prospect, and then we have to send you through the
paces.
The rites of passage. We can get some patch that says like original 2 instead of like original 9 that they had on Sons of Anarchy. we get this pool table. We change out the pool table for like a big meeting table with the Cigar Nerd logo carved in it, like the Sons of Anarchy table.
We're just gonna need to get, you know, we're going to have to make a little bit more demonic or something. I mean, just to have, you know, that badass aspect of it. But
original smokes will be the patch for the founding members.
And there will be no sex on the, you know, Cigar Nerd table.
What are you talking about, man? That is like my plan one. You got to mark your territory in this.
I mean, you just got to, you know, all right, I'm going to need you to get some sanitary wipes or something afterwards.
Yeah, because one thing I heard from an interview with Kurt Sutter, he's like, yeah, I hooked it up on that table one night.
Dude,
I mean, you got it. I mean, that table was badass. I'm sure that's hanging in his house now that the show's over with.
Absolutely. But yeah, I mean, you know, the progression of Clay's character and everything else, I mean, that just, I don't know, man. I was a little bit disheartened, to see how it ended and everything else, I mean, not only for Clay, but for, you know, just everybody in general. I mean,
that final season with him in it is just brutal. I mean, they fuck him up from like every episode there's something bad happening to him until they finally just, you know, kill him off. But yeah, it was not a quick
end. I'm surprised Kurt and playing Otto, you know, a lot of bad shit happened.
Yeah.
I mean,
write this thing and you can't give yourself a happy. I mean, that was bad stuff. I mean, dude's got his eyes poked out. He got raped. I mean, the dude just got messed up like every couple of episodes. I was like, come on, man. Can't you write something good for yourself?
But yeah, I mean, I think that character, I mean, and, you know, talking about Sons of Anarchy, I mean, the actor that played Jax, I mean, we also saw him in Pacific Rim. I mean, so you saw,
Charlie,
those two guys, team up again and everything. And
it's always weird to see him, like, live, too, because he's English. And hearing him speak with an accent after watching, Jax Teller was, like,
well,
the first
dude,
thing
I felt
I really,
that way, you know,
I
about,
really seen him as.
You know, watching The Talking Dead and stuff like that, and you see the,
all those dudes are, like, English.
Yeah, I'm just like, how do you mask that? Like, that just boggles my mind how... And I guess
Andrew
that's what
Lincoln
makes a
sounds
good,
completely different when he's when he's doing interviews. So that Rick Grimes.
I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, to get I don't know. I don't know whether that is a tribute to the actual actors and their talents, or the freaking editors behind the scenes. Or
all right, who would win in a fight, Clay Morrow or Rick Grimes? Last week's episode, that freaking Rick punching that dude in the face.
Here's my premise
behind it.
Is if we're talking, Clay Morrow, the arthritic hands and everything else. I mean, he's got some major, health setbacks. I mean, he's a badass when it comes to the guns and stuff like that. But I think in a hand-to-hand combat situation, I'm probably going to have to give it to Rick Grimes.
Rick's pretty gangster. I mean, if anybody can take down Clay, I think Rick would would have took that fight.
I don't know. I mean, we got our loot crates in. We got a fight deck. I mean, maybe we can do a combo deck or something.
Yeah, I haven't looked.
I will build
a...
my Clay Morrow. You build your Rick Grimes, and we'll duel it out. I don't know if the game works that way, but we can probably make it.
I mean, that 44 or that 41 mag, whatever the hell it is, the big ass gun that Rick carries, that might be a decent shootout.
It just boggles my mind. Those motherfuckers never run out of ammo.
Well, that's because they always raid some place. They keep finding ammo here and there, but yeah, they've definitely acquired some badass guns on The Walking Dead. I'm proud of their selection of firearms.
I mean, you got Clay running the AK-47s and everything else. I mean, AK-47, it's a tried and true proven platform. I mean,
yep. That's how we work them together. We get the Sons of Anarchy to run guns, and Rick and them get some guns from the Sons, and just bring it all together.
As people's got to be like, oh my god, these guys have just come up with the greatest fan series ever. And
I mean, they're fixing to do like the spinoff West Coast series of The Walking Dead. So
I mean, dude, that happened
the Sons
right
can
there
show
in
up.
The SOA backyard. So.
Yeah, I mean, there you go. Zombie Jax.
Either that or
Chips is fighting zombies.
They end up in Belfast or something, and we get to see, the freaking zombie apocalypse spread to Ireland.
That's one thing I like too, is that season where they kind of went to Ireland, and as much as Jax and Clay had their drama, when Jax's son got kidnapped, I mean, him and Clay really came together there for a while, and it was kind of cool seeing him.
Yeah,
as,
I mean, I thought that was really going to
really
be
trying
a
to be
pivotal,
his,
you know,
his
turning point, and at that point, I almost felt like a lot of the bad blood was going to be water under the bridge. So, later as the
kind of after that season, things went downhill when they got out of prison, and he started trying to run coke and just went, deep.
Well, I mean,
gangster.
I think you see that a lot of times where, I mean, you get a taste of the money, the money, the girls, everything else that comes with it. I mean, it's hard to, there's a lot of temptation there. I mean, there's a lot of folks that, you know, want a bigger slice of the pie that are going to stab you in the back. Yeah. And
I mean, that scene where Clay wakes up in the hospital after he's been shot by Opie, and Jax knows that he killed his father and stuff, and just has, like, the freaking K-bar to his throat, and is like, you know, if I didn't need you, you would die right now. And then, like, cuts off his patch, his present patch in front of him, and, like, you know, throws the cut on him and stuff, and it's like, you know that, you know, you'd be dead right now if I didn't need you. I mean, that scene was just
yeah,
so awesome.
I mean, you really saw, you know, Jax coming to his own. I mean, you know, I don't know. I was honestly quite surprised when, you know, he, you know, was able to, you know, kill his mother in the garden and stuff like that. You know, I figured that, you know,
and the
at
way
some
that,
point he would let, you know.
And the way that episode ends, too, when he first becomes president, where he's sitting at the table and has his wife with him, and it just kind of fades to that photo of his father and, you know, his mother at their age sitting at the head of the table. That scene right there was just I loved it. I mean, if I wasn't hooked already,
it was one of the few TV series that truly captivated me. I mean, I was hooked from the first episode. I mean, I freaking binge watched all, you know, freaking yeah, seven mean, seasons and, you know, less than, you know, a week and a half time period.
I mean, I was never really, I mean, I really, you know, don't really get that deep into crime shows. I mean, I never really could get into Breaking Bad, but yeah, that show, it's just, I don't know, it hit on something for me. I just,
you know,
absolutely
loved it. That's a series that I think Perlman would, you know, be good to make an appearance in. If I don't even know if they're continuing it anymore or if it's already done for Breaking Bad.
Oh yeah, that's gone now. But they have a spinoff, Better Call Saul, based on like the lawyer character in that show, which I've not watched any of that yet.
I just,
but it's getting,
you know,
good
recently
reviews.
Started watching Breaking Bad, and it definitely hasn't hooked me like Sons of Anarchy did, but you know, I get bored. It's definitely watchable. You know, I mean, you kind of see some of the same elements there that you do in The Kid Cannabis, where, you know, the guy's suffering from cancer and, you know, basically is just looking for a way to earn some quick cash to, you know, make sure that his family and everything's taken care of when he passes. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you see a lot of the same, you know, types of struggles. At the end of the day, you know, money makes the world go round. So,
and kind of coming to the end here, any final things you want to talk about on Ron Perlman or Man of the Year?
I mean, just mad respects and props all the way around. I mean, I can't think of, you know, somebody that can go from all the animated voiceover stuff to the live acting and everything, and every one of his characters are so dynamic. And, you know, I mean, he's the type of guy that I think I could sit down from, you know, across the table and would not get bored, you know, just hearing some of the stories and, you know, things that he had to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, he's everything I've seen him in. I absolutely love his characters, and I can't wait to see what, you know, new stuff he comes out with in the future. Briefly, before we move on, got a few things I forgot to talk about in our final thought segments later in the show, because we record this out of order, folks. A little behind the mask here. This Friday, February, 27th, is it? Something like that. Whatever Friday is, we're going to be appearing.
Friday is the 27th.
Yeah. Whatever, the 27th, we're going to be at AnacroCon this weekend, hanging out all weekend. I'm doing a panel Friday at 2 as Steampunk Jabba in the Star Wars Steampunk panel with Danny Ashby of Outland Armor, talking about our steampunk costumes. And we're just going to be hanging out all weekend. We're going to try to do a meetup and have a cigar, weather permitting, because it's cold as shit here in Atlanta.
It's cold as shit, but we got a sheltered area. I think we can make it work. I mean, I think that's got to be another qualification, dude. How many times were we sitting out in our garages and everything else before we brought our cigars into the nerd
layers
of
that Jabba costume? I can probably stay warm and still smoke. But yeah, Friday at 8 is like the
sub 30 degree weather.
Yeah. Friday at 8, out by the pool area, we're going to try to do a cigar meetup. So if anybody's in the area or at an AnacroCon wants to come out and have a cigar with the cigar nerds, we'll be hanging out there. And pretty much we'll be hanging out all weekend. So follow our Facebook page and, you know, give us a holler if you want to meet up or something. But we will definitely be there hanging out. And also, if you've seen our badass Cigar Nerd shirts and you want your own, we're kind of working on making those available. So I will make that announcement on our Facebook page whenever that gets into production, so you can kind of, you know, look like your favorite cigar nerds and you dress up as us for Halloween or something. And with that, we'll be right back with some Beer 30.
Stay tuned.
What are you doing? What are you doing? Come on. You never light a cigar that way. You use a wooden match. Preserves the flavor, you see?
Thank you.
Thank you.
You. Let me put this to you as delicately as I can.
Cigar. It was Cuban. Now you pissed me off.
Hey, man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to Beer 30. What are you smoking? We drinking today, Brad?
Today we are drinking the Lagunitas. How do you like that pronunciation? Good thing it's right there on the bottle. Imperial Red. And,
yeah, if you pronounce it as Lagunitas, you're wrong. It's according to the label, because they even spell it out like a pronunciation of it. It's Lagunitas. Imperial Red. We figured that would go with Hellboy today.
Yep. So this beer is a little bit hoppy for my taste, but overall it's not that bad. It's got a dark amber color to it, which I like. It's got a nice beigey, lace and head, and
it's a red ale. It's one of their special releases. It's kind of like a throwback to their very very first beer they brewed back when they first started the company. It's as they say, has a ripe head and muscular malty thorax with silky textures and ale strung together with hoppy sweet nerve sack.
Yeah, weird description.
Don't know what that
is. I mean, these would
a
be
a dank and roasty treat is what they say. And it has a cool dog on the bottle. So
yeah, I mean, I like the artwork here. In fact, the dog kind of reminds me of Wishbone a little bit, just with the spot over one eye and stuff.
Oh, yeah,
so
didn't realize that.
We're going to throw back to PBS right now.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, it's overall got a very nice, texture, and I mean, I would probably drink this beer again. I probably wouldn't pair it with, some of our usual cigars. I think this is more of a beer I would enjoy with some hot wings or something to, a spice to kind of counterbalance a little bit of the, the bitterness of the back end of the hops. But, overall, not necessarily my forte, but not a bad beer.
Yeah, it's a good, enjoyable beer. So what do you give this on the...
Because of my personal taste preference and what I prefer, I like the bigger bodied, stouts and everything else. This is probably more a 3.5 or so in my taste palette, but, folks that are into the IPAs and the hoppier beers, I could see this being a lot more up their alley, more so than mine.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. And we finally actually started a Untappd account for the Cigar Nerds, so... post that on our Facebook later so people that are members of Untappd can follow along with what we drink on the show.
Yeah, and there's another beer that, we were talking about off air that I'd like to go ahead and make mention to, and that's the Hellboy branded beer.
Yeah, Rogue Brewery is actually, because it's actually the 21st anniversary of the comic book, and they've should be out by now, and you can actually order it from their website. What is the name of it? It's Red Right Hand of Right Hand of Doom is the Hellboy flavor, and it has, and even the label is got some Hellboy art from the comic book artists, and I said hopefully we'll get a hold of one of those and use it for a future Beer 30 segment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in fact, once we wrap up this weekend with the NACRCon and our schedule slow down, we'll go ahead and get some of these in order, so that way we can go ahead and do an official review, because I'm definitely willing to try it.
All right, and we'll be right back with some science.
Stay tuned.
And we're back with science. You ready for some learning, Brad?
Man, I'm always ready to get my learn on.
All right, well, I hope you learned something, because apparently, according to science, people are getting stupider.
Well, I mean, either they're not following our podcast and listening to the scientific articles, or your articles are making me stupider. So, I mean,
I'm just trying to keep you ahead of the curve. Because, I mean, I've had this theory for years that people are getting dumber and dumber, especially when I deal with people of a younger generation than ours, of just some of the dumb shit things I hear people say.
Well, I mean, I will say that, you know, as technology advances, and I will say that I have seen people getting a lot lazier. You know, we live in an era where everything's at the touch of a button. Well, when technology breaks down and you can no longer, you know, get to that information, people just don't have what, you know, I think my father and grandfather and everything else instilled on me of, you know, get hands on and figure out a way to get it done. It may not be the most politically correct or up to, you know, government standards or a certain code or something, but at the end of the day, you're surviving.
I mean, even now, I mean, I have not had to memorize a phone number and or an email address in years, because it's all programmed in your phone, or having to, like, just know general knowledge, be like, huh, I wonder how that works. Oh, let me Google this. And, you know, it's,
yeah.
So it's you're not as dependent on having knowledge, or at least, you know, people that are, you know, people from our generation and older generations, at least, grew up with that. But the people that are growing up nowadays that, you know, 5 years old, got a smartphone, they're not going to have to memorize a lot of stuff like we did back in the day. So,
well, I mean, and maybe it's not even so much memorizing, you know. I mean, I was, you know, helping the girls with their homework or something like that. You know, one of the things was they could memorize the information. What they didn't have down pat was the formula on how they got to said information. You know, the teacher basically
comprehension
said,
is not
do this and this. And yeah,
anymore.
Like you said, there was no...
Yeah, here's the formula to solve the problem, but actually having to figure out how to solve problems and stuff like that seems like it's not as important anymore.
Let's reverse the order of operations.
But Richie Lynn, a psychologist with the University of Ulster, has done a study, and now my insane theory about, you know, these damn kids and need to get off my lawn or are getting dumber is actually got some backing. He looked at you know, IQ tests from 1950 to 2000, and we have dropped a full point IQ point, as you know, on average, and we'll probably drop another 1.3 points by the year 2050.
I mean, one of my theories, and you know, a lot of folks are opposed to this, but I feel like a lot of times with standardized testing and everything else where it's created for everybody to pass, you know, kind of, you know, for sports gurus out there, you know, it's not just a winner getting a trophy now. Everybody gets a reward just for participating, so we don't make folks feel bad. And I feel like oftentimes, you know, unfortunately, I view it, and this is my cynical side coming out, as we spend too much time and focus contributing to the lowest common denominator. And
yeah,
I
definitely think there's a point where used to, you know, a standard was set and everyone was expected to meet that standard, but now
and you
it's
may
more
not
of,
have, you know, this two people may not have gone about it the same way.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you've reached the
same expected to hit that. But nowadays, it's more like they've lowered the standard to make sure the, you know, like I said, the lowest common denominator is still succeeding. But 1.3 may not sound like a big deal, but if you look even farther back...
I don't know, dude. You follow global warming at all?
Yeah.
I mean, dude, that's the difference between, all right, we're going to thrive as a civilization, or, hey, we've got an impending, you know, climatical apocalypse on our hands.
Well, another scientist and I cannot pronounce his name. I think he's French. It's John T. Najahuis or something or another.
Dude, you should have just held your nose when you did the pronunciation there.
like I said, I've lost too many IQ points. I can't pronounce this name. But he looked back all the way to the Victorian era, and we have lost a total of 14 points since then. And if you go in this article that I read, there's an example of a test, like an eighth grade test from like the 1800s. And it's, I mean, I understood it, but it was stuff that I probably covered when I was in high school or college, not eighth grade. So it's, yeah, he said, SAT points have dropped like 20 points, since 2007. It's been for decades. SAT scores and all this other stuff has been on the decline. So, you know, it's, everybody's getting stupid.
I mean, and I don't know, you know, I think we've hit the nail on the head with, you know, generalizing way too much. And
well, my theory, have you ever seen the movie Idiocracy?
I have.
It kind of reminds me of that, where there's a guy frozen. He wakes, and he was kind of an idiot in our time, but he wakes up in the future, and he's the smartest man alive, because people who were educated, career-oriented, didn't have kids, and all the high school dropout Jerry Springer play people were having 10, 15 kids, so it was like a de-evolution. The dumb people spread, and the smart people kind of died off.
I don't know. I'm just going to go out there and, you know, throw it out that I wonder if this isn't by design. You know, I mean, I often heard it, you know, said by my, you know, grandfather and my dad that, you know, hey, at the end of the day, business owners, the government, everybody, they just need people that are just smart enough to get the job done, but not too smart as to be able to overthrow folks that are making the decisions.
It may be a, you know, crack theory from a movie, but, you know, I went to college. Other people I know that are college educated don't really have kids, or they may have one kid, but the people I know that dropped out of high school have got like five or six kids now. So there may be something to this movie's theory. But let's move on to our next topic, because do you like guns? Do you like space?
You got to ask me these questions.
Well, what if we combine space and guns?
Then I'd say we got a for real winner.
Apparently our comrades in Russia has done just that.
Wait, you going commie on me?
No way, man. I'm going like FPS Russia. Hello, my friends.
And have a nice day.
recently, because like I said, it's kind of been like a top secret thing for a lot of years, but it's now recently just came. It's because they're no longer using it. But the cosmonaut space program designed a rifle specifically for astronaut survival kits. It was called the TP-82, and it was originally conceived by cosmonaut Alexei Lenova, or however you pronounce that, who, because, you know, Russia's...
Maybe Lenov or something, because,
Because, like, you know, Russia's big wilderness and stuff, and he was, like, one of the first guys to actually spacewalk in the 60s, and when he came back to Earth, his ship crashed 600 miles off course in the middle of the, you know, deepest, darkest woods of Russia. And it took them a couple days before anybody could actually find them. And they were kind of afraid that, you know, wolves and bears and whatnot would eat them. So he decided that, you know, the Russian space agent needed a rifle to survive just in case, you know, their astronauts crashed into
nowhere. I mean, I agree. You know, I was just reading here and it said, you know, basically, the weapon was designed as a case of better safe than sorry. You know what? I operate under that principle almost every second of my life, where I'm always on yellow alert, you know, trying to be cognizant of my surroundings.
And this thing was badass. It was part of the Granat 6 portable survival kit. It was a three-barreled rifle. It had it would fire shotgun shells, flares, and like a regular rifle round. And it had a detachable stock that was also a machete and shovel.
I mean, dude, that's a hell of a multi-tool. Outside of the sheer fact that you got to carry around multiple, you know, types of ammo. But, I mean, given the different scenarios. And, I mean, dude, you embark on a space mission or something like that, regardless of life forms or whatever, you just never really know what you might come across. Or I can't tell you how many times just carrying around a basic pocket knife has got me out of jams. I mean, whether it was to, you know, strip some wiring or, you know, freaking repair something or use it as a screwdriver.
Yeah, I mean, and this thing started being used in 1986 and was used up until recently, just because it fired special ammunition and they no longer made that special ammunition that the rifle took. Now they're using some kind of regular, you know, military issue firearm. But yeah, even our U.S. astronauts have used this when they were, you know, for the International Space Station. Once NASA quit, closed down the space shuttle, and some of our guys had to train with the Soviets to go to the International Space Station. They've actually trained on this rifle, and one article, now that it's been kind of decommissioned, they're talking about releasing a version to the civilian market, so he could get us a TP-82 rifle. I think it's definitely going on my wish list.
I mean, dude. I mean, after, you know, we came out of this ice storm just this week after being without power for, 48 hours. I mean, hey, that might have come in handy had it progressed, for a week's time or something.
I mean, you convert, if it's made a civilian version, convert the same to like 12 gauge and 223 or, more commonly available rounds. I mean, that'd be a badass little gun for, like an emergency kit or hunting or something like that. But also, speaking of space, NASA has just approved their budget through 2016, and we're actually working on a mission to Europa, which is a moon of Jupiter, and one of the places they say they're most likely to find life in our solar system, because it's basically a big frozen water planet. There's underground oceans and stuff from what we've been able to detect so far. So we're trying to get some kind of orbiter or whatnot that it can actually go in the atmosphere and take samples, and maybe even, I've even heard one plan of dropping some kind of robotic submarine onto the planet that can explore these oceans. And as we talked earlier, when we talked about the requirements of life on other planets, one of them is water being present for a long enough time. And since this planet is mainly water, the odds of finding some kind of life form on there
It might just be microbes or, something of that nature. But I think it's naive of us to say that there isn't, some form of life out there. I mean, I think that just goes back to a lot of times we just, we focus only the here and now, and we lose sight of how vast the universe truly can be. I mean, it's crazy just this year or the last couple of years, how many Earth-like planets have been discovered and everything else that, science is saying, this could be a thing, where, 10, 15 years ago, we didn't even know these places existed in our own backyard.
And and so far, we've always judged things on, our planet's kind of in the Goldilocks zone, as they call it, because it's not too hot, not too cold. It's kind of like the perfect zone for life, but that's based on our type of life forms. On another planet, the conditions are different. Some other type of life form that's completely foreign to what's evolved on our planet, may still exist. Just because something from there couldn't, or something from here couldn't live there, doesn't mean something, couldn't have developed there. Just not Earth-like stuff could have developed there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm just, absolutely... Yeah, it blows my mind just the advances and the stuff that's come out, just in our lifetimes as far as, science, technology, where, space and everything else, how much of a benefactor and everything it's truly played. Dude, I don't know. I mean, I say probably within another decade or so, we're going to discover that, there is, like you said, some other sort of life form out there. It may not be, human-esque or, anything that's what we would consider life as far as our planet standards, but...
Yeah, and
I don't know. The X-Files will tell us all we need to know.
Because we know it's coming back, so we're going to have to find some aliens somewhere.
I mean, dude, I'll just follow the Men in Black theory and just, start looking at the tabloids. That's where the real truths are hidden.
Yeah, whatever, Alec Trebek may show up and erase our memories. I just watched.
Who's to say it hasn't already happened?
I've been rewatching the X-Files.
That's why everybody's getting dumber.
I found an episode where they had the Men in Black, and it was Jesse Ventura and Alex Trebek was the Men in Black.
That's another tangent for another segment.
Also, the next version of a Mars rover is being developed too in this budget. So, another future Mars mission is in the works. And lastly, It's kind of old school. Do you remember the old Tootsie Roll, or not Tootsie Roll, Tootsie Pop commercials from the 70s with the owl, and they're trying to like figure out how many licks it takes to get the center of a Tootsie Pop, and they can't get past three because everybody keeps biting it, and they're like, the world may never know.
Dude, I think the highest I ever counted was like 180 something before. Like, I just got to the point where I was like, oh, yeah, I got to chew on this now.
Well, scientists that, well, must have been like really, really bored to come up with this, have written a paper on, in the Journal of Fluid Mechanics, have come up with a mathematical algorithm that will tell you exactly how many licks it takes to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop. they've studied hard candy and with a study on fluid dynamics and how it dissolves various surfaces, and they're according to their formula, it takes about 1,000 licks to get through a centimeter of candy, and since the Tootsie Pop has a diameter of 2.5 centimeters, it should take around 2,500 licks to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop. So now the age-old question from the 70s is officially answered.
Damn. All right, you know, all right, we're going to have to do a Tootsie Pop segment where...
you want to test their theory? Yeah.
I mean, dude, come on. I mean... Tootsie Pops, cigars, and beer, I mean, they all kind of go hand in hand. I mean,
all righty then, go check. With that, we'll be right back with some nerd news.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in nerd news.
And welcome back to Nerd News. Today we've got an extensive lineup of all kinds of crazy articles ranging from TV series to movies to games and toys. I mean, we're all
there's
over
been
the
a
spectrum.
Lot of stuff happened since the last nerd news segment we did. So, yeah, kind of like this has been a productive week, I would say, as far as nerdy news goes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So with no further ado, I'm going to go ahead and open it up to... probably one of the biggest things I'm anticipating in television, and that is going to be the Evil Dead series on Starz.
Yeah, Ash versus the Evil Dead. So far, it sounds like it's going to be a 10-episode series, or that's what it's starting out as.
There's such a cult following, though, behind the original Evil Dead that I can't see this being turned in. You know, it's got to go, you know, more than just the pilot episodes.
Yeah, I've been wanting a new Evil Dead movie forever, so this is going to be awesome that we're at least getting a TV show with the original cast. It's not somebody playing a version of Ash. It's freaking Bruce. Chainsaw Hand Bruce fucking Campbell, as I called him in our Bruce Campbell episode.
There we go. So, you know, we've also got Ray Santiago and Dana Lorenzo that'll co-star along with Bruce.
So, which I'm not familiar with those actors yet. They've apparently been on a few things.
Yeah, I mean, Ray was in, I guess he's most famous for probably Touch and Meet the Fockers, and Dana with Growing Up Fisher. So,
and he's supposed to be kind of like a Ash's sidekick, like, you know, Ash's Robin. And then she's going to be some kind of like party girl that have just kind of got dragged into all this crap and joins up with the famed Monster Hunter.
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's, you know, definitely some anticipation here on my part. So,
no release date so far, but it's going to be sometime this year. In the
fall, they're saying area. You know, sometime late 2015. So,
plenty of time to join, sign up for Starz if you don't already have it on your cable services.
Yeah, and I just checked Comcast for the Starz add-on. It's like $10 or something a month. So, you know what? I'm willing to pay that over the course of a few months.
Scotch burp. It burns. All right, so, Ted, or Sam Raimi is going to be directing the first episode and then producing, you know, him and Bruce are like, you know, going to be executive producers on the project throughout, so it should be fairly true to the original.
Yep, and original, I mean, you even got, you know, Sam's brother, Ivan, coming in. You know, he helped out with Army of Darkness and Drag Me to Hell. So, I mean, dude, as
sure,
far
Ted
as...
Ted Raimi will make a cameo at some point. He always shows up in...
Absolutely, in true Raimi fashion.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to turn this entire Nerd News segment into Raimi here, but
We're going to do a Raimi episode eventually.
Eventually.
I'm adding that to the calendar right now.
So, another thing, I got suckered into going and see 50 Shades of Grey. The only plus side to that is I did get to see the trailer for Poltergeist.
Yeah, I saw it on YouTube. I didn't have to sit through 50 Shades of Grey, but it was damn scary. I mean, the original scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. But yeah, this looks just as creepy, if not creepier, than the original.
Oh yeah, I'm you know, with the newer technologies and special effects and everything else, I think this is going to be one of those films that's, you know, I've kind of been sick of all of the reboots and everything else that's been going on, but
usually as a rule I'm like no to reboots, but this one kind of like, well, you know, when Raimi produced the reboot of Evil Dead or Army of Dark, not yeah, Evil Dead. I'm all over the place tonight. But yeah, it's Ghost House Productions doing this, so it for me, I'm like, it looks good. I mean, they don't have the little midget lady or whatever saying, you know, this house is cleaned. But other than that, I mean, it looked damn, especially there's a scene with a toy clown, which is creepy as it is. But yeah, that thing jumping out of the darkness at the kid. Yeah, I'm like, no, that's...
So, a little bit of a clown phobia there, Joe? Is that what we're hinting at?
Just toys. Like,
creepy
like,
dolls, man. Yes. I don't know what it is.
Regular clowns do not scare me. Creepy clown dolls? Yeah, I'm like, no, just go ahead and throw that in the fire. That's no point.
It's all bad.
Yeah.
So, you know, it looks like it's going to be written by 20th Century Fox. So, I mean, once again, highly anticipating this film. And, we're going to switch gears a little bit from the horror spectrum thing and say it has finally happened.
What's happened?
Spider-Man joining the MCU.
Is Spider-Man doing whatever a spider can?
Yeah, I suppose so. So
yeah, they've how was it? Sony and Marvel has finally come to a deal to let Spidey come play in the Marvel universe. I mean, this deal too is like, from what I've been reading of it, it's pretty epic because we haven't really seen this kind of cooperation in a long time. They're not fully giving Marvel the rights back, but they're like, you can do whatever you want with them and we'll do whatever we want with them. And just kind of like, I think the big thing is there's like a no compete clause. So I think they're going to do a new solo Spider-Man. And Marvel's moved some of their movies around, so there's not a Marvel movie and a Spider-Man movie coming out at the same time. But we're actually going to be able to see him somewhere in the Avengers, or you know, in the Marvel universe. Probably not Avengers because it's kind of too early for that. But I would say probably by, you know, the Captain America Civil War, we'll see Spider-Man.
Well, I mean, that's Spider-Man is a pretty vital, you know, character when you start looking at the Captain America series and everything.
Yeah,
so,
in the original Civil War comic book series, the Spider-Man played a big part in that. So it's going to be, because I think part of the deal was that Spider-Man has to appear in a Marvel property before the next solo Spider-Man film, which is slated for 2017. So we've got,
and I think,
four movies
Civil
between
War
now and then.
Slated for what, May 6th of 2016?
Yeah, something like that. We've got the new Avengers, we've got Ant-Man, Doctor Strange, and then Captain America. So somewhere in one of those four movies, or all of the four movies, we don't know, we're going to see Spider-Man at some point.
Yeah, so I mean, hopefully, you know, I'm,
and also Marvel's,
I just don't
want to
see, you know, a freaking another Spider-Man, yeah, you know, to emo fest, you know. Yeah. So,
and they've kind of, I think they've canceled the Sinister Six movie at this point, but I know they've eliminated Garfield and his series. So we're gonna, when we get a new Spider-Man, it's going to be a completely new Spider-Man. And I think even Marvel's going to help Sony write whatever their new solo Spider-Man stuff is. So it's probably going to, you know, bring it up to a better level now. So we're going to get something, you know, that Marvel can stand behind and say, look, this is how Spider-Man should have been done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know, they haven't disappointed me as of yet, so I don't foresee, you know,
and so far no news on casting or anything, or even if it's going to be Peter Parker or maybe one of the other Spider-Men, we don't know yet.
Yeah, so. I mean, I really wouldn't mind seeing a, you know, decade older Peter Parker. However, the dude hasn't aged at all.
I heard they're going to try to go young with it too, kind of, or continue with a whatever high school age Spider-Man. And if you're watching the,
so are we going to get to see, you know, freaking like, you know, the, what was it, the Ultimate Avengers cartoon series.
Yeah, I mean, cause that's the way kind of it is in the Marvel. I don't know. There's been three different ones. I'm not even sure what the current title is. Marvel's Avengers Assemble or something. But in those series, Spider-Man is like in high school, or in the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon, he's in high school, and it's kind of, you know, he's kind of like the kid that hangs out with the Avengers when he shows up in an episode. So I'm expecting that kind of same dynamic.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, in that series, he was almost, you know, the equivalent of a Jar Jar. Everything his hands touched seemed to just go to poop.
Yeah, I've kind of been disappointed with the Sony productions so far, but yeah, I'm interested to see what, now that Marvel's got a hand in it, how it's gonna turn out.
And kind of keeping with our comic book theme here, another update is the Deadpool casting hints that have recently released, which, dude, I am absolutely stoked for Deadpool.
Yeah, this is one of the things I'm probably looking most forward to. Ryan Reynolds tweeted out a picture of some of the early costume. We got a picture of, like, the mask and the gloves, and it looks pretty accurate to the comic books. So we're not getting some, you know, other origin story or that lame Baraka looking Deadpool from Wolverine Origins. So I mean, it looks legit Deadpool. I'm so excited about it. And who's some of the cast that's been announced so far?
Well, I mean, as far as cast, unfortunately, the source I was looking at was just kind of giving the hints. They wouldn't actually come out and say who the characters.
TJ Miller has been announced, and they've pretty much, from the character description, have decided he's going to be Weasel, which was kind of a Deadpool sidekick tech guy, I believe. And UFC fighter Gina Carano, whatever, who is badass. She's going to be playing Angel Dust, which is like a leader of the Morlocks or some kind of underground mutant group or something in the Deadpool Marvel universe.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we've seen other, you know, looks like we got Blind Al, Ajax also making an appearance and stuff. So, yeah, I don't want to try to get into all of the nitty-gritty details and everything else, but, you know, I'll say that, you know, as far as reading potential characters and, you know, the way they're described, you know, as far as their ethnicity, their age, and you know, the build of their body and everything, you can kind of, you know, start drawing. And I don't know, I mean, it would be kind of cool to do a segment, I guess, saying, all right, given this description, who do we think the best actor would be?
So far, like I said, I've Ajax is gonna be played by Ed Skrein from Game of Thrones. Like I said, I've not really watched a whole lot of that. But they're also saying that people that have seen the script say it kind of reads like a buddy action flick with Deadpool and Colossus. But so far, there's been no clues on who Colossus is going to be, only that it's not going to be the same guy that's been in the X-Men movies so far. So it's going to be a brand new actor that they've not released yet. I would say The Rock.
You know,
if you went with a more adult Colossus, freaking Rock's son of a bitch.
Yeah, no, and you know, that's the thing, man, is so many of these, you know, wrestlers have come out now and they're, I mean, you've seen it with The Rock, you've seen it, you know, with John Cena, and you saw it with Batista, and I mean, dude, these guys, they freaking, you know, do the wrestling acting down to a T.
Speaking
and you
of
put
Batista,
them
he's going to be in the new James Bond movie.
Oh, sweet.
I haven't heard anything about who his character is going to be, but yeah, he's in the new Bond film. I mean, he's starting to blow up as an actor.
Yeah, I mean, all of these guys, I mean, they put a lot of heart and effort into, you know, their acting and everything. And, man, yeah. I'm glad to see these guys branch out into some additional avenues because it's worked so well.
Who else would you think be a good Colossus if other than The Rock? I've heard Armie Hammer suggested. Apparently he does good voice, whatever, accents, because he's going to be in the new Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie, which is based on the old, whatever, 60s, 70s spy show. I've heard him tossed around. Dolph Lundgren, we could do old Colossus. He's still pretty big. Yeah. And he's Russian. We already know he can do a Russian accent.
I mean, let's just bring Arnold onto the set. I mean, all right, maybe not, but...
Oh.
All right, kind of switching gears. Netflix is reportedly in the process of making a live-action Legend of Zelda series.
Yeah, that's a few years ago. There was like a fake trailer for a live action. It was like an April Fool's joke, but it looked badass. So, you know, if this property's as good as the fake trailer we got a couple of years ago, I mean, this could potentially be something cool. I mean, Zelda. Yeah, I mean,
they're basically trying to, you know, basically dub it as the Game of Thrones, you know, for families, if you will. I don't really understand. I mean, a lot of blood and sex and everything else in Game of Thrones. I'm not necessarily seeing that in, you know, Hyrule, but who knows?
I wonder how many
gratuitous
pot-shattering or jar-shattering scenes we'll get for anybody who's played freaking all the old games.
That and, you know, running around collecting all the freaking rubies and everything else.
Yeah, because I've not played Zelda since Nintendo 64. I've not owned a Nintendo product since then, but that,
you know,
actually, I think it was my first game I got when I bought
I guess I've had it now for 6 months or so, but when I went out and bought the 64, that was one of the very first games that I got for the 64 was Ocarina of Time. Just
the original gold cartridge NES version. I think that was one of the first games I ever bought, and like I said, I've played, you know, every incarnation up to, I think, Majora's Mask was the last one I played. So I've seen what the series looks like nowadays, but yeah, that was always one of my favorite
games. I've got it on
games.
The Wii upstairs, and, you know, when you're using the arrows and stuff like that, you know, it adds a certain dynamic, and it brings you more into the game. Plus, the updated graphics aren't, you know, necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I found the gameplay to be very fun, and, you know, it sucked me in just as much as, you know, what, you know, the original Nintendo and the Nintendo 64 versions did.
I mean, one of the things that I've heard people say is, you know, in all the games, Link never talks, so are we going to have a silent, mute Link in the game, or are we finally going to see what Link sounds like?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, he's had dialogue, but there's never been necessarily a voice behind
the dialogue.
No, it's
always been like, text or whatever. So yeah, that'll be interesting to see see what we get out of that.
And kind of tying into the game theme, I was proud to be a backer of this project, but it's just crazy to see how much it has exploded. And speaking of explosions, I'm talking about the Exploding Kittens card game.
So what? I've never heard of this. So what? What is Exploding Kittens?
I mean, it is basically a card game for people who are into kittens and explosions, laser beams, goats, outlandish back hair. It's kind of a kitty-powered version of Russian roulette, is how it's described. Where, you know, players will basically take turns drawing cards until someone draws the exploding kitten, and at that point they lose their game. However, there's upgrades and different dynamics to, you know, be able to screw over your opponents or help your, you know, to team up and partner. So it just seems like it's going to be pretty lighthearted fun and, you
kind
know,
like a
bound
weird
to be
Munchkin-esque type game.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it's crazy for, you know, a couple of guys looking to, you know, earn $10,000 was their goal. And as of right now, with 21 hours to go, they're at $7,633,850.
Damn.
It is now officially the most backed Kickstarter campaign ever. Jeez. So, I mean, it's just awesome to be able to see these guys go out, create a product, and, you know, just the watch it go viral and explode.
Like a kitten.
Yes. Kind of, you know, sticking along with the game, the toy line, Hasbro has leaked what the monstrous Indominus Rex from Jurassic World is going to look like. And
yeah,
this
the first
is
time
a,
we've... Because they've not even really showed it in any of the trailers yet.
No, I mean, there's been some dark, shadowy silhouettes, but you haven't seen...
To
you know,
me, it looks like a mix between a crocodile and a long-armed T-Rex.
Yeah.
So a T-Rex with long arms is going to be, that's going to
mess
you up.
Yeah, I mean, this right here is going to, everybody that's, you know, seen, you know, the memes there with, you know, the T-Rex and the useless, you know, short arms. Yeah, This guy is going to reach down, disembowel everything within its path with no problem.
But hey, Chris Pratt has SWAT raptors. That's all I'm waiting to see is like the raptor biker gang taking on.
Well, I mean, dude, I mean, depending on the reach of the T-Rex, I mean, he'd just reach out, you know, pick one of the raptors up and, you know, take a couple of chomps out of them. But, and I keep saying, you know, referring to the T-Rex as a male, but in fact, it is female. So there's that.
Yeah, it's going to be even more trouble then.
And, So, we talked in a previous episode about steampunk Nerf guns and things of that nature. I ran across this article and thought it was absolutely badass. Nerf has come out with the freaking Rival Blaster that shoots basically 1-inch round foam at 70 miles per hour. So it is like now a Nerf airsoft gun.
Yeah,
but it's designed so that it doesn't create whelps and everything, but it does come with an optional, you know, face mask protection that goes with
Man up, take the hit.
Paint scheme of the gun. So, you know, I definitely want to get my hands on one of the Rivals. And
I just want the Nerf nuke weapon that they have on ThinkGeek, because that thing just looks nasty.
Oh, yeah, and apparently they've got, you know, the freaking anti-aircraft gun.
Jeez.
And everything else, so...
All right. Well,
you know, definitely some things to, you know, spike your geeky interest.
I think that'll about wrap us up. So final thoughts on that cigar. I didn't get sick yet. What about you?
No. In fact, we eventually broke out the scotch and started pairing it with the cigar. And even the combination of the scotch, I mean, you know, granted, I had dinner not too long ago. I guess for somebody that was on an empty stomach, it might pose trouble, but... You know, being the cigar nerds that we are, having the cojones that we have, no problem.
That cigar is a Tuesday night for me. I mean, it didn't bother me none at all. But like I said, if you have a weaker constitution, then you may.
I think this may be the
if you're not carrying your man card,
you may not want to earn your official cigar nerd patch. Then, you know, we're going to put one of these bad boys in your hand on an empty stomach. All right, if you walk away without hurling, then we're good.
Final thoughts.
Final thoughts is there is so much out there that's coming up day by day that, dude, I'm anticipating all the different, you know, things going on within Marvel, the, you know, freaking Evil Dead, you know, Ash, series and everything. I'm almost going into option paralysis at this point because I'm like, is my budget going to allow me to do everything that I'm going to want to do?
Well, let me ask you, since this is our first induction to the Cigar Nerd Hall of Fame with Mr. Ron Perlman, who's somebody else you think we should look at to maybe, you know, add them to the Hall of Fame in the coming years?
I mean, one person that I always see, you know, when I hear the name is Clint Eastwood. But knowing that Clint Eastwood does not actually enjoy smoking the cigars, I don't know if I can necessarily say that. You know, I mean, I'm not saying the guy's got to be a connoisseur or be on, you know, the cigar nerd level or something. But, you know, if you're going to have a cigar in your hand, I at least want to be able to see somebody there enjoy it.
I think for me, the next nominee I would have to look at would be Adam Baldwin. He looks like he smokes a cigar in every property he's in. He smokes at least, you know, a couple cigars. So yeah, he may be on the nomination block for next year. And hey, if y'all have some nominations, send them to our Facebook page or email us at, you know, cigarnerdpodcast@gmail.com and let us know who we should possibly vote for our next installment of the Cigar Nerd Hall of Fame. And with that, you know, like I said, email us at cigarnerdpodcast@gmail.com. Check us out on Facebook. Like, share, subscribe. Check out our website, cigarnerdpod.com. Check us out on the ESO podcast website, esopodcast.com. And, you know, we're part of the ESO network. Check out their Amazon store while you're there. And with that, I think I'll end it with one of my favorite quotes from Hellboy. And that would be, as soon as I reopen this, "There are things that go bump in the night, Agent Myers. Make no mistake about that, and we are the ones who bump back." And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We are your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.